When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast. I'm your host, Harold Thornborough, and I'm joined today by Brad and Starla Walker from Walker Family Homestead. And we met at the Indiana Homesteading Conference, or at least I met Brad there. And you guys just have an interesting story about getting into homesteading, and you actually purchased Abby's Elderberries from John Moody. That business. And I thought that was interesting too, that you know, John, his family kind of put that together and got that going and then sold that to you. And you guys have kind of took the ball and ran with it. And I think that's pretty fascinating. So with all that, welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great. I just want to hear your story, because I'm always interested in how people get into homesteading, because were either one of you homesteaders, like grew up on homesteads?
No, I grew up in suburban St. Louis with a single mom, and lived a typical suburban life. Taco Bell was my favorite restaurant. we pretty much ate everything out of a box for the most part. I'd go to school, I'd eat my ramen noodles when I got home, wash it down with a hot pocket or two. I had no real skills. So my granddaddy was a farmer. He was a dairy farmer, in West Tennessee, but that was kind of the extent of it for me. It was just, that was a nice place to visit, but I don't really want to live there kind of thing. And, suburban life was all that I knew growing up. And, the thought never crossed my mind. The reality of, where does my food come from? It was just never something I thought about or really cared about, just whatever kept me going. And so when we got married, we actually had a conviction to not live in the suburbs, and we were committed to living the urban life.
Yeah. In the city.
In the city. And part of that had to do with pastoring a church that was planted in the city and things like that too. But you want to share your side of it up to that point?
Yeah. So I grew up not in the country, but it wasn't usually city. It was often kind of village where people sometimes had some land. My aunt and uncle always had an orchard and a garden. I was maybe one generation away from, kind of living off the land. Mm-hmm. But my parents, were city folk. Ish, and still are. But my first two boyfriends were dairy farmers. And even though I didn't end up marrying those men, I kind of, in the back of my mind, they had larger families and they, grew most of their own food. Mm-hmm. And they were Mennonite. And in those communities, it's very homesteading, farm-ish. Yeah. And so when Brad and I got married, I knew I wanted to clean up our diet. I'm a massage therapist, and I'd gone to massage therapy school in my early 20s, and I knew about alternative medicine, and I knew food was an important component of being healthy. And so I said, Brad, if you will let me clean up our diet, you can buy a house, because you really wanted to buy a house.
I wanted to buy a house when we got married.
So. And I really didn't want to buy a house, but that was the deal. And so
we bought a house.
So we bought a house.
Win-win there, sounds like.
And I cleaned up our diet. So we were eating better, like not out of a box. Things were from scratch. Things were fruits and vegetables and whole grains for the most part. And then the Lord blessed us with fertility, and we just ended up having a lot of children close together. And I wanted to feed them well. And I just realized it's expensive to have meat.
When we got married, I was working in law enforcement.
Right.
which is actually a pretty critical part of the story.
Yeah. So I knew that he could shoot a gun and I really wanted him to learn how to hunt. And he was just kind of hesitant, really didn't want to, but I found a hunting buddy for him who was an older gentleman. And that's how, that's really how homesteading started.
Love telling this part of the story because it was an event that we were having for the church that, we were planting that I was pastoring. And it was a neighborhood cookout thing at my mom's house that I showed up to like 15 minutes later, I think, than she did. Her and the kids walked over to my mom's house or something like that. And I came like 15 minutes later. And by the time I had gotten there, they had like my first hunting date set with this guy who lived across the street from my mom. And, you know, I thought it was a way to, you know, build a connection with guys in the community and something she had always wanted me to do. And so I was like, fine, I'll do it. And that first season that I went hunting, the last day of the season that year was on New Year's Day. And I got my first deer. And we cooked some of it for dinner that night. And I was hooked at that point.
You probably like tore the loin out of there and
And
it was like, yep,
we took those tenderloins out. We cooked them when we got home. And the thought like just blossomed in my head that like, I can actually put food, like physically really put food on my family's table.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my gateway drug.
Wow. Yeah, I hear lots of stories like chickens and bees and this and that. I hardly ever hear anybody say hunting was my gateway into homesteading. That's awesome.
Yeah. And so from hunting, we had moved to the quarter acre in the city
mm-hmm.
that we lived on. And when we got the house, it actually came with chickens.
Just threw those in, huh?
Yeah. It was from a friend and they were kind of homesteading minded and they had the chickens and they were moving to Louisville and we were renting the house from them and they're like, do you want to keep the chickens? And Star was like, yes. So we started with like 6 laying chickens and, you know, I started hunting and then we started doing rabbits. We started raising mm-hmm. rabbits for meat and then.
And then he had a chicken problem for a while. And I think we ended up with like 35 chickens on that property.
Just egg layers.
1/4 acre.
Yeah.
That was just the egg layers. They would just show up, I think.
Sure.
For those of you not watching, Star was rolling her eyes at me right now.
Oh, that's great.
They did show up, but they came through our van in a box with Brad trying to like hide it from me.
It's amazing how quickly they're going to accumulate.
I just walked up the driveway and just throw them over the fence and hope she wouldn't see it. But then we discovered Justin Rhodes. And so we were like devouring all of Justin Rhodes' videos on YouTube. And then, you know, you go down that slope and then you discover Joel Salatin.
Mm-hmm.
And then your mind explodes with all the possibilities of what you can do. And then you start reading the books. And then before you know it, you're building a chicken tractor to raise pastured meat chickens on your quarter acre lot in the city.
Same place. I'm in the same place.
Yeah, yeah. And so Starla calls me a schemer. Mm-hmm. So
when, not a bad thing.
And, yeah. In all of in a good ways.
Yeah.
So how this happened was we probably started with 10 or 15, maybe meat chickens or something like that. And we would have people over from the church or neighbors or whatever. And we would cook them one of our chickens and they would be like, oh, this is the greatest chicken I've ever had. Can I get one from you? And we didn't know, we weren't in it to make money. We were just trying to take control of our own food.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to figure out like, well, what is this chicken worth? I want to give somebody good food. And then again, the other like things start blossoming in my head and I'm like, oh, if I sell enough of these, I feed my family for free. Right. And so then that happened. And then it was like, if I sell even more of these, I can actually make money doing this. And then before you know it, we bought 15 acres and I'm milking cows twice a day. We've got pigs and chickens and turkeys, and we have litters of Great Pyrenees puppies right now.
We have bees.
We have 7 beehives. We harvested almost 300 pounds of honey this year. It's just been, and it's been a wonderful, exciting, unexpected journey for us.
So are you full-time farming then now?
So when we moved out here 4.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think we had said, we roughly had like a 5 to 7 year plan to make that our full-time source of income.
Okay.
And within 2 years, we made the jump and I was full-time here at home. And a big part of that was COVID.
Yeah.
Because all of the child tax credit money that they handed out, right, wrong, or indifferent, when you have 7 kids,
yeah,
they gave us quite a bit. Yeah. And so we just invested it into our farm.
Yeah.
And so we put up pasture fences and things like that. And it was all the infrastructure that we didn't have that was going to take us so long to save up for and to build up and to buy a couple livestock, like buy a cow or two or whatever. All of a sudden it
showed up overnight.
The money was there. Like, yeah, it literally just got direct deposited into our account and we were like, all right, let's do it.
Yeah. We had been praying about, we want, you know, 5 to 7 years seemed reasonable, but we really wanted to do it when we did it. And we were just praying like, Lord, like, you know, how could this dream be a reality? And it was pretty instant answer to prayer.
I don't know how you are, man, but like, I love spreadsheets.
Yeah, I have a bunch of them.
I love spreadsheets. And when you're creating this 5 to 7 year dream, it, no matter how much you move and change the numbers and move the columns and stuff, it doesn't generate money in your bank account.
Right. Yeah.
But when it all of a sudden shows up there,
yeah,
it's, man, what a providence it was for us. And so that and some other factors going on for us, allowed for us to, it's been almost 2 years now being full time, on the farm. And, our kids get to work alongside us when we do like butcher days. Yep. Everybody's out there, everybody's working. Mm-hmm.
It's an anatomy lesson. Like, they know how to butcher. They know what it looks like, what different parts of the animal's body look like. Mm-hmm. It's just been a real blessing. We have a lot of children and we don't really have any plans to stop having children until our bodies are done. And people are always like, oh, that's so irresponsible. Children are so expensive. And honestly, we were poor when he was a pastor. Like, there were a few years where we really, like, our income was so small.
Not a lot
small.
Of money in it.
Yeah, it was negative income, I guess.
And the Lord has been so kind. Each time we've added a child, he has increased how much money we've had. And so we have not felt lack being full-time homesteaders.
Yeah.
Especially when you are creating so much of what you're consuming.
Yeah.
So. And just in the past 3 weeks, we put over 200 pounds of meat in our freezer.
Mm-hmm.
100% of that came off of our land.
Wow. Yeah. That's a great feeling, isn't it?
It is. It's a wonderful feeling. And it could give us like a false sense of security. But what it does provide for us is the notion that like this is real. You can do this. You can really provide for your family.
Mm-hmm.
Off of, you know, a medium sized piece of land. You don't need 100 acres, right. And you can do it off a quarter acre.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you guys pretty much just pursue the meat side of things for your income, or do you do anything with the vegetables as well or produce or anything?
Our soil sucks. So we're in a slow building battle with our soil. So everything underneath us, like there's slate underneath us, and then on top of that, you're in that
rocky part of Indiana, for sure. Yeah.
And then on top of that is just clay. Mm-hmm. And so we are slowly trying to build, and every year we can see it getting better.
Oh yeah.
And it's a whole lot more fruitful every year.
Yeah.
But we are not near the point of what we do grow. It's good for us to keep it, mm-hmm. but we're not to the point of doing market garden stuff.
Yeah. So we're not there yet, but we have a lot of things to forage on our property. And I think that we will be turning those into extracts soon that people can use for medicine. We can't recommend what people use the extracts for, but we can say this is yarrow extract, and then people can Google it and figure out how they should use it. Yeah.
It's kind of like raw dairy in Indiana too. You can't really tell people how, you know, this is for your pet, right? But you can't really say much beyond that.
Right. Our pets have always loved raw milk.
And we're not doing that right now, but that was the bread and butter
that got us through
for a year and a half or so was the farmer's market. And, you know, we have a pretty strong customer base at the seminary across the river from us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were able to have a lot of relationships and a lot of pets consuming milk in the area.
Same thing. Yeah, a lot of healthy pets down there.
That's right.
I will say too, so the big plans for our future here are that we are going to turn what used to be a cow pasture into an elderberry forest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we are going to buy somewhere between 300 and 600 plants.
300 is the initial. Okay. Going into this, 300 plants going in the spring. And then we'll just, we're going to grow it from there. So,
yeah, let's talk about that for a minute. You guys purchased Abby's Elderberries, the business from John Moody's family.
Yep.
But it wasn't, you weren't growing the elderberries. You guys were buying the organic or just elderberries in bulk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're sourcing certified organic berries right now. And we're building a relationship with an Indiana elderberry farm, actually, and hoping to make the transition to use a lot of their fresh frozen berries instead of the dried stuff right now. And then our goal, and, you know, if we get them in the ground, the starts in the ground in the spring, you know, we're looking at 2-3 years of majority of our products are coming from our property. The berries are, and our hope is the same with the honey too.
There's nothing that propagates and grows easier than elderberry. Every year I take a bunch of cuttings, just stick them in the ground, and then I have these big old bushes the next year or two. You know, it's crazy.
And we were able to forage some this year too. So we purchased it from John in September of 2022. So we're just over a year in with the elderberry business. And we have made elderberry for years, but we could have never told you what an elderberry plant looked like. And once we learned all of that stuff, we saw it everywhere. We got it on our property. It's on our church's property. It's all down the road. It's across the street from us. I mean, it's just absolutely everywhere.
Yeah.
And we try to keep that quiet that people could find it so easily.
That's a good way to do it. Sit on a podcast, you know, that'll keep it quiet.
Because it would put us out of business if they knew how accessible it was.
The shame is that it's often near GMO corn.
It likes to grow along corn.
I mean, there's so much that you can see from the road, but I wouldn't suggest consuming that.
Or it's just sprayed. Even if it's not GMO corn, it's sprayed. So,
yeah. Yeah, obviously, though, it isn't getting too much spray or it probably wouldn't be surviving. So you kind of think about that, too. But yeah, you're right. So now are your elderberries, are they American elderberry, or they are like there's European varieties, hybrid varieties? I mean, what are you sourcing?
So we're planting 3 American varieties in the spring, but what we're using right now are European.
Mm. Yeah, I have the I've I purchased, and they're European varieties, I think. Actually, I'm not even sure if they are or not. They're not wild. They're not like the normal ones you would see growing in the ditches and stuff. They're just like a little different, and they're very prolific. I mean, they really put out a lot of berries.
We had three different varieties, American varieties, that we picked out specifically for longer harvesting season, us being south of Interstate 70 there, running right through the middle of Indiana. So there's a couple of varieties that tend to do a little bit better further south.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Well, how's this business working out for you? I mean, you purchased it and it seems like it's been growing for you.
Yeah. The Lord has been kind to us, continually. Hopefully that's always our refrain, is that he's kind to us. But, we took the year off of kind of homesteading for profit because we wanted to learn the business. We wanted to make sure we knew what we were doing because we wanted to honor the Moody family.
Yeah.
You know, they built this, they worked hard at it, and we didn't want them to hand it over to us and then have us just kind of let it blow away like chaff in the wind, you know? So we really invested this year into building it and growing it. We've had a record. I mean, I don't have much to compare it to, but compared to like quarter four of last year, we've already surpassed all of our sales goals this year. We've surpassed all of quarter four last year. We did that just in the month of October.
Yeah.
Awesome. I've been preparing even just the past couple of days, working on our biggest purchase order ever. We're going into 15 Indiana JC stores.
Oh, wow.
Hopefully the first week of December or so. So, there's a lot going on, a lot of good stuff, and it's keeping us busy, and, it is providing for our family right now, thankfully. So
do you think, I'd like to hear your opinions on why do you think it's the elderberry is such a successful business right now? I mean, is it just part of this homestead tsunami thing and people just know or hear about it through that? And it's kind of like, I don't know. You think there's a reason why it seems like it's getting more popular?
I mean, I think our niche kind of, and partially just because it's the circles we run in and like John ran in, is the homesteading crowd, right?
Yeah.
And we're seeing a lot of it come from that. But we have another brand 20 miles from us in New Albany, and they are far from the homesteading niche, and they're doing tons more than we are.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think a lot of homesteaders probably make their own, honestly.
Right. And so those in the homesteading circle, I think, you know, we're selling a lot of just bulk berries.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Even like DIY kits where, you know, they would still want to make it themselves and things like that. Mm-hmm. They don't just want to buy a package product. But I mean, I think why it's exploding is why Starla found it in the first place.
Right. I think so too. I think COVID is going to help a lot of businesses and just businesses that are doing things naturally.
Yeah.
Because I think people already had a growing mistrust of the government. I mean, I think anyone our age who grew up taking pharmaceuticals all the time, if you did, which a lot of us did, I was always on an antibiotic. It didn't help me. It didn't do anything for me. And then it hurt me. And so I think there was a growing skepticism of the medical advice in general and pharmaceuticals for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I think COVID, man, that really...
Exponentially.
People
a year after COVID, things really, I mean, people really stopped trusting what was being said, especially about a year after, I think.
Which is great because God has already given us pretty much everything we need to be healthy outside. And all we have to do is relearn the information that we knew a long time ago, or, you know, make that knowledge even better and more accessible now. And then we have to do it. So a lot of, you know, natural medicine, you just got to do it. You know, you got to put it in your body because it doesn't work if you don't put it in. And then you just have to learn about it. And I think elderberry is just a really easy one to start with when you're getting your feet wet, because ours tastes amazing. You take it every day, but you don't have to take it 10 times a day. It's not like homeopathic medicine. You can just take it once or twice, and it's really giving you a lot of bang for your buck. And it's affordable. It's affordable to buy the syrup. Pharmaceuticals are so expensive right now.
And if we were to write a commercial for it, we wouldn't sound like these pharmaceutical commercials that have like 30 seconds of side effects, right? Like, you might profusely bleed from your eyeballs. And
there's no side effect. You could drink the whole bottle and you just might feel a little like, oh, I just had
to. I shouldn't have drank a whole bottle.
May cause dizziness or death, right?
Yeah. Right. No, not at all. Right. And also, you can give it to your, I mean, you can give some of our syrups to your baby. Yeah. We make one with glycerin, we make one with maple, and we do a just elderberry. So you, I mean, it's just safe for everybody. You know, any baby over the age of one, maybe not a baby anymore, but they could have our regular original. But so there's a syrup for everybody that we make. And it works so well. It's an anti-inflammatory. It's good for your heart. It's good for cold and flu. It keeps you from needing an inhaler or an emergency room trip when you get an upper respiratory infection.
And we've been there for all that.
Yeah, it helps, you know, people that have autoimmune disorders, it can help you go into remission. And so I think people are starting to take health back into their own hands, which is where it should be. I mean, God is the one that heals us, and he uses the things that he gave us to heal us.
Yeah. Which is why it goes so hand in hand with the homesteading movement, because people are getting into homesteading now, exploring homesteading for the same reasons we did, is because there's that mistrust of the food industry.
Yeah.
Right. You saw Food Inc. And you're like, oh my gosh, what in the world am I eating? And so I think that's why those two worlds, Food Inc. like just destroyed me. It like crushed everything I knew about food, you know?
Yeah. And it was an eye opener for sure. Yeah.
And so I think that's why like those principles and those ideas, they're starting to crush into each other. It's not just, they're not mutually exclusive anymore, right? It's not just food and it's not just pharmaceuticals. It's people are starting to develop a holistic approach to their own health and see how those things work together.
I think you're right. I mean, beyond the elderberry, it's just everything. It's why people want to buy, you know, chickens that are pasture raised. They want to buy, you know, their milk raw. They're wanting to really take their health into their own hands, eat right, eat whole foods, get as much as they can away from these grocery stores and the pharmaceutical industry and all these things. And yeah, I think you're right. And yeah, you guys are just seeing a small piece of that with little parts of your business.
Right.
But I think as a whole, it is the reason. I mean, beyond that, there's bigger reasons even in homesteading or other reasons even in homesteading, but I think such a big part of it is just the health aspect of it.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I had never heard of kombucha 5 years ago. And it's like, it's everywhere now.
Yeah.
Like, I can't turn around and not see kombucha. And I hated it five years ago.
I was making kombucha 8 years ago. So it's funny that he hadn't heard of it. It's
just like, yeah. Yeah. You probably should have been noticing that if it was in your house.
Listen, it's all right. I don't hear him sometimes too.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I enjoy kombucha. And, you know, I go through periods where I'm making a lot of it, and then I'll go, I'm kind of tired of it after a while, and I'll stop making it, and I'll get back into making it again. I kind of go in and out with it, but definitely in the summertime I drink a lot more of it. It seems like I'm gonna get away from it in the wintertime. I want those hot drinks in the wintertime. But yeah, elderberry, I mean, this is the time right now. We're coming into the season where I'm sure you're gonna see the sales go up and stuff, because this is the time when you really need to start taking something like that if it's the reason you're taking it, you know, if you have some issues with the colds and this time of the year and stuff. And it does help, it does make a difference. And
we definitely see an uptick around back to school. For those that send their kids to school, that's a great opportunity, like to start taking care of your kids that way and protecting them. And then come October, like I said, like October was huge for us, which is kind of the start of the weather change and things like that, and people start to feel it. And then even you get around the holidays, And I think people want to, that's when people are together.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And we've gone to family events at Thanksgiving and Christmas and come back with like RSV and all really kinds sick. Of stuff that,
yeah.
You know, you're just around people and they show up sick and, you know,
because they want to see you, right. Which is good.
Because you see them yeah. twice a year yeah. and they show up and so we see an uptick in sales then yeah. too, because people are starting to gather and they want to build up immunity and protect mm-hmm. themselves.
Yeah. So every day we do elderberry syrup. We take it at least once or twice. And then almost every day, which we have 5 different varieties of syrup for people. And then we almost always have a cup of tea from our blend. Yeah. That has elderberry in it, plus lots of other good things that will help you fight off anything. And we have 4 tea blends.
Okay.
So I do think, especially our teas, but just healthy tea in general, combined with the elderberry really helps.
So you're selling all this stuff from your website?
Yeah. Abby'selderberry.com.
Okay.
All that stuff. And we were talking before, John Moody, who, you know, started the business with his family. He wrote the elderberry book.
Yeah.
That's the title.
Had him on the podcast to talk about that one
yeah,
time.
Yeah. And it's a fantastic resource. We have it available on our website as well. And anytime people are just curious about elderberry or want to know recipes and things like that, that's the resource that we
yeah,
point people to.
It's very good. Yeah. So let me just kind of run down. So what you're selling, you have actual the bottled up elderberry.
Yeah, we have syrup, bottled up syrups. Yep.
And then you can buy kits like to make your own.
Yep. So we have a DIY kit that would make about a quart of your own syrup. So okay. certified organic ingredients all together in the bag, sealed. There's instructions on the back of it. And all you have to do, just follow the instructions and then you add your own sweetener to taste.
Okay. Okay. And you're selling these tea blends?
So we have 4 tea blends that okay. we sell as well in the same. They're 4 ounces of loose tea that we sell on the website as well. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. So you guys got a nice little inventory of things people can get into there. Right.
Yeah, we try to keep a little bit of diversity there yeah. and offer different things for different folks.
We also sell tincture and dry berries also.
Okay. Awesome.
Tinctures are back ordered right now.
Are they still? We had so, for a few more weeks.
We actually, yeah. at the conference that we met at, we had just sold out of our tinctures and we just had a mad run on all of our products. But, you know, the tinctures take a while to develop and
yeah
thought I had a pretty solid inventory of them and I was wrong. And so
well, that's a good thing. I mean, if you're gonna have problems, those are the kind to have right there in a business.
And our customers are wonderful. They're very patient. They're aware of the back order and they keep ordering. So
yeah, well, it's a good product. And I hear nothing but good things, even since John owned the business, that it's just been nothing but good said about Abby's elderberries and you know, just how well it works, how great it is. And I did want to ask you about like shelf life and stuff. Mm-hmm. How does that work?
So the teas and the DIY kits and all of those are, we say, a year.
Okay.
They're in stand-up window bags that are heat sealed. So they're fine. They could go longer than that. They're pretty shelf stable. Now, currently our syrups require refrigeration.
Mm-hmm.
And so we put on every bottle, there's a production date. And then there's a best if used by date
okay.
that we stamp it 4 or 5 months out.
Okay.
So if kept in the refrigerator, you're most like, and if you're taking it regularly, you're going to consume it long before that date.
Yeah.
But yeah, if it's kept in the fridge, we say 4 to 5 months. Now we are working with Clemson University right now we've gone through like a phase 1 of testing with them and we're working on developing a shelf stable syrup.
Wow.
But the trick in that and the difficulty in that is keeping the integrity of real ingredients.
Yeah, you can make it shelf stable, but will it have the same?
You can easily
have the same punch. You know what you're wanting out of it.
Stable stuff, but we want to maintain the integrity. We want to keep. You know, we're able to say right now, all of our ingredients are either locally sourced or certified organic.
Okay.
So we can either go visit the farm ourselves and we know their practices, or we're getting them certified organic. So we don't want to ruin that by throwing a whole bunch of junk in it just to make a shelf stable product.
Right.
So we're trying to take our time, do some good R&D with it and make sure that we have a good natural product that serves both purposes.
Yeah. I guess I wanted to just ask about that because a lot of folks are, you know, they have a preparedness mindset. They might want to say, I want to stock up on a bunch of this. Well, you really can't do that. It's not something that's going to last forever on the shelf or anything. You have to kind of take it as you go, you know.
Our recommendation, if you want to stock up, go to abbyselderberry.com, buy a whole bunch of DIY kits or bulk berries, and those will last you.
Yeah, yeah, you could freeze them, right? And probably
you could do a lot with it. So
awesome. Yeah. Well, back to the homestead stuff. You guys homeschool your kids?
We do.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I see a lot of folks, you know, especially larger families, you know, that's their way now. And I mean, I think it's great. How's that been going for you? I mean, I like to dive into that.
Yeah, I think really well. So I'm the primary homeschooler. Brad reads history with us.
Okay.
A few times a week. But yeah, I've been homeschooling our children since our oldest together was 5. And Great. We have done different things. We were part of co-ops for a while and things like that. Mm-hmm. At this point, we have too many children to manage a co-op well, just because they're in different places. And we did classical conversations for a while, and they're supposed to be a one-to-one parent kid ratio, and I just have too many kids
we at this point to do for that. Years.
Yeah. Got outnumbered.
But yeah, we still do we do classical conversations, the information that they would learn every week. We do that and we follow the cycles that they do around the world. And then we just have kind of pieced different parts of the education together. But our kids are, I think, really smart. They love the Lord. They know a lot about the Bible. They know so much. They know
fantastic.
They have such good theology. They can sniff so young.
They can sniff out heresy like nobody's business. It's amazing.
They can. And we do. We talk a lot about, I mean, we do. We memorize scripture together. We sing hymns and other songs about God. But we're not just talking about that. Because we're with them all the time, we're talking about life. Like they see us maybe fight every once in a while, and we talk about it afterwards. We repent in front of them and to them. And we're just talking a lot about culture. Culture is a hot mess right now. And we are talking about why, you know, why is it good that God made you the way he did? Why is it good to be happy with the way that God made us? Mm. You know, why we don't want them to grow up and then look at the world and be like, I didn't hear about any of that. You know, when I was with
A lot of people would have done well with that talk about 20 years ago. And
And that was always my stereotype of homeschool kids, right? They're just so sheltered, and then they get in the real world and it just smacks them in the face and they don't know what to do with it. And they're like a kid an unsupervised kid in a candy store, because they just want to they want to experience everything that they never heard about. And, you know, our job is to disciple and protect our kids.
Mm-hmm.
We can't shield them. Well, let me figure out how to phrase this. We can shield them from the wickedness of the world without exposing them to all of its content.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So
it does to me. Yeah. I think this is a part of homesteading that just doesn't get talked about enough, because we can grow our own food and, you know, do these things, but this is, you know, it's a lifestyle. And if you raise your children, to know how to do all that, but not how to, you know, deal with the world. I mean, is it really going to last? Is it going to build a legacy, you know, for your family?
And on top of that, the homeschooling aspects of it too, like a lot of, and the benefits of being a business owner and working from home is they get they get free business lessons, free business classes, like as I learn it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I don't have an MBA or anything like that. Like I have a degree from a Bible college.
Yeah.
We get to have business classes. We talk about risk and reward. We talk about investment. And they're all little budding entrepreneurs themselves. And so they're learning how to manage money and do all of those things. But they're developing real skills too.
Yes.
Yeah. In the midst of all of that, right? So they can sniff out heresy. They can sing a song about Martin Luther and the Reformation. They can tell you what year Genghis Khan ruled the Mongols. But they can also butcher a chicken, and you know, they can do a sales pitch to you about Abby's elderberry. Like they,
the important things, right? I got
the important things, right?
Yeah. I mean, our children go after a super worldly person, they're not going to be impressed. But if our children find and seek after people that are growing up in a similar situation or who that just seems really attractive to, like, I don't think it's going to be hard for them to find a spouse.
Yeah. What's the age range on your children?
So we have 7 in the home, 10. So 10, 9, 7, 6, 4, 2, 10 months.
Well, yeah, you guys got your hands full, but it's a blessing. It's a full quiver, but it's a absolute blessing for sure.
It is. We're thankful for it. And again, one of the other things, and I'll add to, I think this is something that gets left out of homesteading often, is a multi-generational perspective.
Yes.
So, you know, we in the last 50, 75, maybe even the last 100 years, we've lost touch with, you know, we have nursing homes now, right? When our parents get too old, we've lost the biblical idea of caring for those who are older than us. And I'm an only child. So I feel that burden heavily, especially to care for my mom. She's, she's been single for 34 years. And so we're in the process of building an apartment. I'm not building it. She's paying a friend of ours to do it, but we're converting 800 square feet of our house into an apartment for her. And it's just another layer, I think, of one, building generational wealth, but so not only taking care of the younger generation below us, but taking care of those who came before us and honoring them. And if we can do both of those things well, then we create a generational wealth system that goes just beyond, do my kids know how to milk a cow? And do they know all of these things? Like, it goes so much further beyond that, where this is how you become a blessing to generations.
Yes.
Right. That we're not just a one-shot deal. And even if our kids don't choose homesteading as a vocation, that have the skills where they can do these things, take care of their family, but they can continue to pass this on, this legacy on for other generations.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's what we're aiming for And we tell our kids all the time, even with the elderberry business, like, we want to do well, we want to build the business and we want to grow it, but it's not just so that we can make all kinds of money.
Right. Yeah.
We're doing it because we want to have something to hand off to our children.
Yeah.
We're creating a legacy now. Like, I'm 42, Starla will be 40 in a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. That, you know, we just don't have that desire,
right,
to make millions of dollars. Right. But what we do desire is to create healthy systems to build multi-generational wealth.
Yeah, I love that.
Looks more than just bank accounts.
Yeah, that and you know what's crazy is, you know, not so long ago that was normal,
right?
You know, and that is so abnormal now to hear you talk about that. It's just, that probably sounds so weird to so many people.
It's weird. Yeah.
In the homesteading realm, to some people, they probably think that just sounds crazy, you know, right. But it was the absolute normal way to live just not so long ago, a few decades ago, it was normal.
And there are still pockets. Like, we have Amish communities near us. I think you have Amish communities near you.
Yeah, where
they have the houses, the Doty houses and stuff, where they do this well.
Yeah.
And they create that generational wealth. And it's something us us English folk have we've forgotten. We've gotten away from it.
We need to relearn it. Yeah.
Well, this is definitely an aspect of homesteading that doesn't get thought about enough, I don't think. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right that it's something now. I feel like I'm an old man now, so I'm kind of past. My kids are all doing their own thing before I even got into homesteading. So, I mean, I kind of missed out on a little bit of that. And I hate that, you know. But I love that to hear that you guys are doing that and that you're encouraging other people to consider that, because it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. And I think it's the healthiest. It builds a healthy foundation for a family, for sure.
Absolutely. And I think, too, so Mimi did grow up on a farm. So she actually knows a lot about gardening and things like that already. But even if her, you know, even if her generation, even if she hadn't, she's an amazing seamstress. And so she's going to teach myself and our daughters to sew. And by the time they're done with 10 years of Mimi lessons, like, they'll be professional seamstresses, and they can make beautiful clothing for themselves or to sell. And I just think there's people know things, even if they're not homesteaders. You know, you bring grandma onto the farm to live, and she probably knows a lot about something that she can teach everyone that maybe mom doesn't have time to teach everyone.
Yeah.
So
I think about, like, my grandpa was like an amazing carpenter, you know, and he passed a lot of those skills on to my dad. My dad passed a lot of those down to me. Yeah. I mean, it got diluted to some degree by the time it got to me, but how much better would that have been if it had been direct, you know, and we'd have been right there next to each other all the time doing that kind of work, you know. That'd been so much better, and you can learn so much more, and so much got lost, I'm sure of it. Yep. I've seen his projects. I know a lot got lost compared to my projects. For sure. Well, you guys are doing a great thing down there. I love to hear what you're doing. You got like 15 acres, I think you said earlier. Is that what you're dealing with?
Yep.
15 acres. Sounds like you're using it well. The hunting started with hunting, and you've grown into so much more than that. Really, it didn't start with hunting. I mean, it started with this desire that you guys had to, you know, eat better. Starla, you had that desire to see better food going into your family's bodies, you know, and you guys pursued that. And then it just grew from there. And I'm glad there's been influences out there like Justin Rhodes and Joel Salatin and those people that can influence you and really just kind of give you the motivation to really, you know, pursue your dream and education as well. I mean, nobody can, there's not much better than watching some of the people who do it every day teach you how to butcher a chicken or, you know, or whatever. You know, there's just things you can learn from these people that are doing it every day that, you know, if you just you can do it yourself and learn these things yourself, but it's better if you got some help for sure.
If YouTube is a wonderful teacher and we would not know how to do half of what we do if it were not for YouTube, but YouTube cannot be your only teacher.
Yeah, right? It's limited.
You have to put hands on a chicken. Yeah. You have to, you know, you have to do the things. And I couldn't tell you the countless times when we started out and we started doing rabbits or chickens that literally, like, I've got blood covered hands with my phone and I'm hitting play. And then I'm pausing it, going
back it up a little bit. I gotta watch that again.
Where did he cut? What did he just do? I'm gonna screw this up. And yeah, there's just a lot, and there's a lot of trial and error in this lifestyle.
Yeah.
I guess when you decide to be full-time homesteaders and business owners, like, at some point you can't be afraid of every risk that you take.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you just have to learn and do and trust people around you, trust the Lord, and and do it. And if you suck at it, okay. Like, try it again tomorrow or find something else to do.
Yeah, find something you like.
Right. Yeah.
Because a lot of times just trial and error too. You just discover there's things, I don't want to do that. You know, I tried that 1 year, I didn't like it. I'm gonna do this instead and try this. And we can't all do the same things, right? I mean, I think it's good that we are all doing some different things, because there's, you know, I mean, there's just some things I'm not interested in, but I'm interested in the product, but I'm not interested in learning or doing that thing, you know. But I'll buy the product from somebody, vice versa. I'm doing the things, and you can do some bartering or whatever. Yeah. And that's how it works, you know, and that's how this system works together. Yeah. So yeah,
it's like they used to do it like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like it's supposed to be that way.
It's like it's supposed to be that way or
something. One other thing I want to say. So I think this ties into everything. And so I think whether you have kids or you're in the grandparent phase. So one of the reasons that I wanted to do this is because I read the Laura Ingalls Wilder books growing up. Yeah. And it seemed like such a fun life. And you know what? It is such a fun life. Yeah. I love it. I love every day of this life.
There is a bit of romance to it. Like before, like when you're thinking about it and there is a romance to it. And then there's a reality to it, but they do meet somewhere in the middle.
Absolutely. Right? And so the hard part is the skill building part where you don't know how to make sourdough and you want to make bagels. And it's just like the first few batches are terrible, but then you figure it out and then you have the skill forever. But I think for grandparents and even parents, we need to probably get away from public libraries because they're just the things that kids could find in there could be really soul wrecking for them. And parents probably aren't reading every single book that their kids get from a library before they get them.
Kids read nowadays? I don't even know.
Yeah, I hope so.
Ours do.
Some do.
And so like anytime we have a chunk of money that we get, we put some of that money into buying books for our kids that we know are good books. Yeah. And so I think there are so many good books that capture children's imagination that remind them of how we used to live or how we can live now. And I just think that that is a really important piece, especially for children. And anybody can help support, you know, growing a family library for their kids or their grandkids or whoever it is, because books really, they put the romance in your idea for doing something and then you do it.
And then you do it.
Yeah. And then you realize, oh, this is good to do.
Yeah, it does start with, you know, and the spark, the idea that, you know, to get you motivated, you have something in there that makes you want to love it, you know?
Right.
And, you know, it's funny because Rachel, my co-host, we were just talking about this the other day on the phone, and we were talking about how, you know, a lot of the people who listen to the podcast are action takers, but a lot aren't. A lot, it just kind of tickles their fantasy to hear the conversation, you know, and they never really take action on it. But I guess that's what I would say is that is the seed though. You know, you got to get that fantasy, that idea tickled a little bit. So you want to pursue it. If you don't have that, there's no start to it, you know?
Yeah.
So you do want people to dream about it at first.
Absolutely.
You know, you do hope it starts with a dream, but then you want people to just to take that one action, plant a seed, get one animal, do something that's the next step and then start pursuing that dream. And then what you figure out is like, you know, 5 chickens turn into 35 real quick. You know, it's like, it don't take anything and it just rolls, right? I mean, it takes off.
Yeah.
So any last words before I let you guys go?
No, man, we enjoy this conversation. It's been fun and appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. And
you guys got a great story for sure. You want to just run down, people can reach you at abbyselderberry.com. Yeah,
abbyselderberry.com. Facebook is Abby's Elderberry. Instagram, Abby's Elderberry.
Okay.
We can also find our farm site, walkerfamilyhomestead.com. We don't have a lot that we're offering through there right now at the moment. Hopefully we will again in the spring, but we do have a few things that we're offering through that website too.
Well, I will get those links in the show notes and point people your direction because I think you guys are doing some great stuff there. And I just love everything you guys are doing. You guys are the epitome of what I feel like a homesteading family, the pursuits, how it should look and what you're doing. And I just love it that it's fairly new to you, just a few years in, but you didn't grow up that way. But yet you got a dream and you chased it. And I just think you guys made a lot of progress and doing some great things. And I'm excited to see where it goes for you in the next few years. I mean, I don't know, but it sounds like you guys got
kind
big,
of scary.
Yeah,
it is. We have some ideas and some dreams and
you guys are making great progress.
We appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Awesome.